Welcome to the Let's Talk EMDR podcast, brought to you by the EMDR International Association, or EMDRIA. I'm your host, Kim Howard. In this episode, we are talking with EMDR accredited practitioner Lee Simmons about EMDR therapy for vicarious trauma. Lee is located in London, England. Let's get started. Today, we are speaking with EMDR Europe accredited therapist and consultant Lee Anna Simmons to talk about EMDR therapy and vicarious trauma. Thank you, Lee, for being here today. We are so happy that you said yes.
Thank you for having me.
Lee, can you tell us about your path to becoming an EMDR therapist?
Well, my core modality is art therapy. Actually, on graduation, I received a scholarship from my university, Goldsmiths University of London, to implement art therapy where it doesn't already exist. My proposal was to go to Lebanon. So I went to a refugee camp and an addiction centre in 2012-2013, running art therapy groups mainly. And then when I returned to the UK, I went to work in the social services, helping to set up a community mental health team, which was a bit of a new thing at the time. They used to have them in the 80s, and then it sort of come back round. So as part of that, I'm working a very broad cross-section of the community and having witnessed trauma in Lebanon, because the war in Syria was taking place next door at the time. And then working with, some very distressed people, adults and children, people who hoard, just started to recognize how much trauma was underneath a lot of the symptoms that I was working with in the social services. And EMDR was a way of being able to help more, to really turbocharge art therapy. At the time, there weren't many EMDR therapists who were also art therapists. I actually searched and I only found one who was in the United States, and one article, which was an MA dissertation, also from students in the United States. So it was quite exciting as well to be able to connect the two modalities and encourage more art therapists to train in EMDR, because the two, modalities do forge very well together.
That must have been quite an experience, going to a war-torn country and working with people who are literally on the front lines of traumatic events happening. And right now it's going on in Israel and Palestine. And so there's, unfortunately, there's things like that that happen all over the world, and none of us really can control it. We can only respond to it. So I appreciate the work that you've done in the past and that we'll continue to do in the future, and all of the EMDR therapists and the other therapists out there who do support that kind of work. And so I know that's not easy. So thank you all for what you do.
So what I was really struck by on that placement was how receptive people were to art therapy. They were just so keen to have the intervention, and we had groups up and running straight away, and had a fantastic facilitator, a Lebanese lady. Coming back to the UK, it was good to be working with the structure and the support of the social services, but the speed at which we could get the work off the ground in Lebanon was really quite something. And I think with EMDR, it's the kind of environment where people would be very receptive to that too.
Yeah, we've done a podcast interview and we've done articles in the magazine and on the blog post about early EMDR early intervention and how crucial that is, and the protocols that go along with it, and how it can be utilized to help with things like that, whether it's man-made tragedy or a natural tragedy. And so we're just grateful that there are people out there who do that work. So yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite part of working with EMDR therapy?
I love seeing the change unfold in front of me in such a profound and kind of dramatic way. You get some really clear aha moments and really see people sort of making the connection and the change in the way their body's holding on to trauma, the way they're remembering themselves, the way they're remembering other people and environments. And I really enjoy how the memories generally, obviously depending what you're working with, but generally soften and become a lot more compassionate and positive. So this is something that I like a lot, and that with a lot of clients, not with everyone, but with a lot of clients, this can happen very, very quickly. When I originally was sort of learning about therapy and coming from the psychodynamic base, that's so powerful and valuable. But there is quite a lot of focusing on the problems and the upset and what went wrong and who did what, the impact of doing this went with the EMDR. I love how the change, the natural healing is stimulated, and it pretty much always encourages acceptance, forgiveness of others, of the self, and that can be very beautiful to witness.
That's a great answer. Thank you. So today we're going to talk about EMDR therapy and vicarious trauma. So for the audience members out there who are not familiar with the term vicarious trauma, can you please define that for us?
Along with EMDR, this is quite a dynamic area. So there will probably be some new definitions floating around, even by the time people are hearing this podcast. I consider it as when a working environment and work impacts the self, a practitioner, maybe a frontline worker, firefighter, police officer, therapist, paramedic, when they're impacted by the traumatic nature of their work and their sort of worldview changes, and they may start to feel symptoms of trauma themselves. I can go to the Headington Institute and give you their definition. I've got it to hand here. Vicarious trauma is the process of change that happens because you care about other people who have been hurt and feel committed or responsible to help them. Over time, this process can lead to changes in your psychological, physical, and spiritual well-being.
Those are great definitions. I think that there's enough trauma in the world that happens to people, literally happens to people, but then there's the trauma that we witness other people going through, and how helpless that can make us feel as human beings. Our internal office talk is a lot about how us as a staff, how we help the helpers. We consider therapists helpers, you know, and that's our job, is to help you guys. And so you guys witness so much of that, whether it's coming through your door in an office setting or over a Zoom call or a phone call, or whether you're on the front lines of a natural disaster or a man-made disaster. And so I would imagine there's a lot of people out there who don't realize they might have vicarious trauma. So we'll get into talking about some successes and that you've seen and some myths. So what successes have you seen using EMDR therapy for vicarious trauma?
I just have one comment to add before I answer your question that sprang to mind when you were talking, which is with EMDR, the way that we're having to work with often the most difficult image and the most sort of traumatic aspect of a memory to then enable the healing, the sort of favorite bit of mine that I told you about earlier, I think that really exposes EMDR therapists to vicarious trauma. Because as soon as somebody's better, you don't see them again. And the next person is with you. And again, you're with the absolute worst part of the memory. You don't return to it, you move on. But we are exposed to that consistently. She's pretty tough. But yeah, sorry, now to your question. I just wanted to say that and not forget, because I feel it's very relevant to our listeners. Successes using EMDR therapy for treating vicarious trauma. I'm sure you're aware of GTEP. You'll be well aware of GTEP, the group traumatic episode processing model, where you can use EMDR with a group of people. That's proven very useful in supervision of therapists that I've worked with. And I'm aware my colleague, Oliver Wright, who I was running a recent training with, he's also used that at work, supervising groups of therapists. My client group that I was thinking of recently were art therapists working with unaccompanied children with refugees, and they had quite a limited amount of sessions they could work with them because there's so much need there. So though they were doing a great job, there was, you know, always the sense that you want to be able to do more. And I used the GTEP model with them and found it really helped to sort of build themselves back up and prevent some fairly distressing experiences from the work environment, from sort of getting stuck and potentially becoming PTSD, which was a risk. It was quite clearly a risk at that point. And whereas Oliver was using the GTEP model with therapists who were supporting a community who had experienced a very, very traumatic fire where a tower block went up very quickly. And there was a very strong sense of injustice because of events that led up to that. And then the displacement. So this has been a sort of ongoing issue for years. And yeah, he's found UTEP very helpful there. I also think that EMDR can really allow practitioners to find out where their vulnerabilities are. Like, we know that you don't work with someone who has similar trauma to you if possible. For example, if your house is burned down, you're not going to then work with somebody who's to fire because it's going to be too close to home. But sometimes we're not aware of what our vulnerabilities are. So with EMDR, we have the feeder memories, don't we? If someone comes to you for a trauma they experienced when they were 30, sometimes the processing doesn't happen as you would expect. And it's that feeder memory that's underneath from something they didn't think was relevant that maybe happened when they were 10. So with EMDR, I think it can allow practitioners to sort of fill in the gaps and really make sure that, you know, they are in the right place to work with the client groups they are and reduce the likelihood of becoming traumatized themselves.
I'd like to go back to earlier when you talked about the impact of seeing trauma in their clients and how it impacts the EMDR therapist. So how do you practice self-care?
I use quite a variety of techniques. Being largely in private practice now and doing quite a bit of supervision, I can really mix up the kind of work that I'm doing. So I really keep quite a varied caseload. And at one point, I did have a lot of child abuse cases, whether they were children being referred to me or it was adult clients, and then we were sort of uncovering abuse that needed to be processed. I know I was completely available to those clients and committed to working with them. I did let people know who often send me referrals, no more of cases of this kind for the time being, and suggested, you know, other areas that I'm interested in working with, for example, vicarious trauma. And I have found I've had quite different people come in through the door since putting that limit. And also limiting the amount of EMDR I do. It's such a growing field that you really can, I think probably most experienced EMDR therapists find they can do as much as they can do. The referrals tend to be fairly unlimited. So building in other things like supervision, running some trainings, getting outdoors, keeping my own hobbies and interests going. At one point, it did feel quite tricky to do that. And I noticed I really enjoy climbing. I find that a really great way to de-stress. And that just seemed to be falling off my life map. And I noticed it was helpful for some clients, like children in a school, for example, to actually trained up as a climbing instructor to be able to keep that sort of on the table and take some of my clients climbing. And that really helped me to then keep it there for myself as a hobby and an interest. So yeah, I think skilling up in your sort of knowledge base on vicarious trauma and looking at ways of guarding against it and sort of keeping that in mind, probably the best way. Through running the vicarious trauma trainings, I think it became fairly automatic for me to notice when certain things were slipping or changing and to address that. But without having that sort of knowledge base and all the feedback from the people that I'd worked with on how they sort of manage their workloads and what symptoms they might recognize, it may not have been quite so much at the forefront of my mind. Giving yourself permission for self-care as well is a really big one.
That's a good piece of advice. Thank you. Are there any myths that you would like to bust about EMDR therapy for vicarious trauma?
At the moment, no, because I think EMDR is such a dynamic field. It's sort of growing and changing and developing different strands all the time. And vicarious trauma is also quite a new field of awareness that more people are starting to learn about and work in. So at the moment, I don't think there are myths. I think there's more of an exploration. In terms of the GTEP model, I'm aware that that is now sort of being evidenced. So the research is taking place, and I think there is information available and some articles out there on how helpful it can be. So I don't think there's myths as such. I think there's more about learning what everybody else is doing and sort of compiling our knowledge base.
Thank you. Lee, are there any specific complexities or difficulties with using EMDR therapy for this population?
It can be quite hard to treat therapists and psychologists, and it can also be fantastic. I've worked with tens of clients in private practice who are also psychologists or even EMDR therapists. And sometimes their awareness of the therapeutic process, of what I'm doing, of the framework, can be really enabling because they're on the same page. But other times it can be quite hard for them to leave their sort of professional self at the door. And they may question and analyze what I'm doing rather than just allowing themselves to be my patient and to be taken care of by somebody else. I've also found sometimes people might use being in therapy with me, having the EMDR therapy, as a little bit of a training exercise so they get an insight and can learn from it. But I use things like the container exercise and different methods to try to have them put their sort of professional hat out the way and experience therapy. And like I say, with some people, it's great because they know what you're doing and they can really, you know, go with it. Sometimes it can be more difficult and you feel a little bit scrutinized.
Got it. Do you have a favorite free EMDR-related resource that you would suggest either for the public or other EMDR therapists?
Well, earlier, that definition that I pulled up from the Headington Institute, that is a very good website. It has like a number of videos about vicarious trauma for, you know, the frontline workers as well as for managers and for organizations. And there's a free reading course, so you can actually download the reading course and do that. It's www.headington-institute.org. You can explore that website, but if you just put vicarious trauma into the search bar, you'll find it. I originally was recommended that website by Jennifer Hall, who I was running some trainings with at Doctors of the World around 10 years ago. So recently I ran a training with Oliver Wright, who I mentioned earlier, who was working at Grenfell. We compiled quite a lot of resources and sort of favourite links and videos and books into a little article, which is due to be published around now with the EMDR Association UK. So that's got quite a lot of links of our favorite resources too.
Thank you. What would you like people outside of the EMDR community to know about EMDR and vicarious trauma?
In terms of vicarious trauma, I think how broad it is, it really can affect anyone and it can creep up on you. Often the people who are very empathetic and resilient, I think they can be more susceptible, though resilience is a way to guard against perhaps someone who's used to being able to cope or plow on. So if somebody's, you know, really cares about their clients and they're really pushing themselves, you know, they're going to be more susceptible to vicarious trauma realistically. But just half a day learning about it, that's all you need to, you know, to get an awareness on how to protect yourself and recognize the symptoms, support your colleagues. And in terms of EMDR, though it can feel really incredible and surprising and profound for people, it's not magic. You know, for some people, a few sessions will have an amazing impact. But for somebody else, you know, it might take years of sort of EMDR psychotherapy that they need to get through the different layers, and somebody else might just not click with it. Every therapist is different. They're going to come from their own different modality and skill base and with their own personality. So though it's an area where I really enjoy seeing people testing new ideas and finding out what works best, I also do believe that when it comes to therapy and your mental health, you want to make sure that your therapist is properly trained and they do have registration with a governing body. I know it's different in the States, but in the UK, to be a psychotherapist or a counsellor is not actually a protected title. Psychologist is, art therapist is. We need to be registered with the Health Professions Council, but otherwise not. Whereas when you're trained in EMDR, to be a member of the association or to become accredited, you have to have a proper recognised training and to be keeping up with all of your CPD and having supervision, and your supervisor is likely to be aware of vicarious trauma and, you know, making sure that therapists are taking care of themselves. So I think really for the wider community, this is an area where you want to make sure that your therapist is properly registered and trained.
We have talked about this on the podcast before, so I'll remind the audience listeners who are not therapists who might be seeking therapy to please make sure that person that you are connecting with is certified, trained, some official body has said, yes, this person is an expert in EMDR therapy or whatever other therapy you might be seeking. Because quite frankly, people can say that they're experts or that they offer, they don't say they're experts. Usually they say, I offer this kind of therapy. But what credentials do they have to back it up? So you need to make sure that they are somehow credentialed somewhere. Because quite frankly, somebody can read a book and watch a couple of videos and say they provide fill-in-the-blank therapy. And that's not what you want. You want to make sure somebody really understands what they're doing. The other thing that you mentioned is, we've talked about this on the podcast before, the finding a therapist is a lot like dating. You know, you have to find the person who, number one, you know, specializes in your area of need. You know, if you're seeking therapy for your child and people that you go to don't mention anything about working with children, then don't go to them, because you need to find somebody who specializes in that population. And so you got to do a little bit of homework. I know that can be kind of stressful when you're worried and stressed out and traumatized and trying to find healing, but it's important to find somebody that works in your area of need. And then also when you get and connect with that person, if you're not connecting with them for some reason, or things don't seem right, or you don't have to stay, you know, you can say, you know, this isn't working for me. I need to find somebody new. I'm sorry. And move on to somebody else. And so you have permission to do that when it doesn't work. Yeah. And so you got to find the right fit for you.
With EMDR, because it is so good at addressing these blocks and PTSD and, you know, the trauma that's stuck in the body, EMDR therapists tend to be a little bit more flexible about working with people who have another therapist. If someone's in long-term therapy or psychoanalysis, you can talk to your psychologist or psychotherapist. And if you want to do EMDR, you might find that they're willing to pause your work or take a supporting role while you go and work with an EMDR therapist on the particular thing for a set number of sessions. I've done that a number of times, and it can be a really helpful sort of way of co-working. But when it's tricky is if you go back to your counselor or psychotherapist and then start recounting what happened in the EMDR session, because we start with the problem and then the memories start to change and the healing's taking place, and we don't go back to the sort of real stuckness. So if you then go to your therapist and talk about all of the sessions, you kind of go backwards, and it can be quite tricky. But you can go to an EMDR therapist, and if your therapist agrees, continue working with them. But you want them to be in touch and make sure that it's not clashing. They're not.
Good advice. Lee, if you weren't an EMDR therapist, what would you be?
I was an artist for about 10 years before becoming an art therapist. And, you know, in a similar way to becoming an EMDR therapist, from an art therapist, as an artist, I kind of wanted to do more with community groups I was working with. I was having to be really boundaried if people were talking about issues and refer them to other people. And I felt a little bit sad about that with some of the art projects I was doing. So I'd probably still be an artist. My art practice is still very active, but I don't have as much time as if I hadn't gone into the therapy world. But I do like how artists can really work across disciplines, you know, very creative. You often connect with, you know, scientists and therapists and people who work in horticulture. So I imagine I'd probably be just doing more art projects that are sort of community focused and based around health. Instead, my art practice has gone a little bit more into the studio and has become more, I suppose, for me, and more explorative rather than doing any sort of involved like public art and community art projects.
What's your preferred medium?
I really like painting. I mean, I find myself doing projects more of the time where I end up involving lots of people and then we do something in the public sphere. But I think what really gives my brain a buzzy pleasure is just sitting down and painting. I actually think it's not dissimilar to EMDR in a way, where you have a map, you kind of know, you know what you're doing, what you're aiming for, but you don't really know the process that's going to get you there or exactly what the outcome is going to be. there can be a bit in the middle where it all feels a bit messy, but then when you trust the process and you keep working on it, you usually get this lovely kind of like aha kind of feeling when you know that your painting's finished. Yeah, so I enjoy that a lot.
That's awesome. Lee, is there anything else you'd like to add?
I would like to mention secondary trauma. Secondary trauma obviously can affect practitioners, but it's also something that would be affecting the wider public, particularly as, you know, we do have a lot of different bad news unfolding around the world, and the way that social media has evolved, a lot of very distressing images available constantly. So I think when learning about vicarious trauma, it's fairly natural to also learn a bit about secondary trauma and how even seeing the news on repeat and then create those traumatic symptoms within the viewer. So thinking, you know, anyone who's listening to this who's not an EMDR therapist or has a friend who's like stuck on their laptop looking at news or the TV, maybe think about taking a little bit of control over when you're looking at news, what time, when that's good for you, and just safeguarding your own mental health around that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about this before on this podcast too, because I'm in charge of our social media accounts. And there are days when being on social media is not fun, be honest with that. And there are days when I just have to limit what's going on with that. And I know some people can't do that, but if you can possibly limit your news exposure and or your social media exposure, it's better for your mental health anyway, when there's not something traumatic, overly traumatic going on. I mean, the news is generally not that great most of the time anyway, but if there's something like an extreme incident happening, it's even more traumatic to absorb what's happening. And so it doesn't help any of us, I think, to stay glued to our TVs or phones or social media feeds and constantly watch that. There are just some things you just, your eyes cannot let go of. And so, yeah, if you can limit that, it's healthier for you in the long run. So that's wonderful advice. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I've really enjoyed talking to you, and yeah, thanks. It's great to have this conversation at the same time as doing the work with EMDR UK, and just feel that we can share our information. And really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's a good way to end a podcast. Thanks, Lee. This has been the Let's Talk EMDR podcast with our guest, Lee Simmons. Visit www.emdria.org for more information about EMDR therapy, or to use our Find an EMDR Therapist directory with more than 15,000 therapists available. Like what you hear? Make sure you subscribe to this free podcast wherever you listen. Thanks for being here today.